We're here with Julian Coriel. Hi, Julian.
Hello, Dennis.
Julian is here with keyboard, guitar, voice, hair, the whole thing.
I brought the hair today.
You know, it's good of you to do so. I do appreciate that part. And we heard about Julian. How did we hear about you? I think we just met at 2130 Fulton Street. So
we did.
I think that's basically what occurred there. But all kidding aside, we heard of Julian because I heard of Julian from the same folks that work with Michael Penn and Amy Mann, and people who listen to the show know what big fans we are of them. And then, of course, I had to go through all the Amy Mann records, and then I find out that you played on them. But that's not really what it's all about. You have a dad whose name, and you're probably like, oh God, is he going to go there in the interview early on? And yes, I am. You have a dad who, if people do spell your last name correctly, they might recognize. What's his name again?
Edward Van Halen.
No kidding. Wow. So wait a minute. So your real name is... By the way, it's good the mics are directional enough so the studio audience can hear this. Okay.
I just thought it would be fun to say a different name for once.
So your real name, is Julian Coriel Van Halen. What is the derivation of that?
In 1978, my father and David Lee Roth met in a smoky club. I believe it was the Starwood. And through their union, they met with Edward. And after some biological wrangling of sorts, they managed to create the only living, breathing 30-year-old singer-songwriter that was conceived by three men.
I was just going to say, was Sammy Hagar in this picture at that moment in time or not?
I believe he assisted.
He did. Yes.
He was the midwife.
The midwife. That was the word. Yes. This interview is going right down the tubes. It is absolutely, it's over before it started. Okay.
But I can get you back on track if you
would
want.
Would you do that, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
No, my dad is Larry Coriel, the jazz guitar player.
Indeed. Indeed. And my cousin, who is several years older than me, who is totally into jazz, you know, used to put on Chick Corea records and say, that's Larry Coriel. So I'm going to call him up and say, I interviewed Julian Coriel, and he'll say, And then I'll say, but he's the son. And he'll be, oh man, that's so... But as for me, I've been a rock and roll boy, and obviously so have you. But that brings me to kind of a question. You grew up surrounded by these musicians, by jazz musicians.
Yeah.
So was there influence in the household, and where did it kind of all go from there? What was like when you were 3 years old, what was on the stereo, and what were you thinking at that moment in time?
When I was 3 years old, I think Miles Davis was living with us briefly.
Literally.
Literally.
Amazing.
And he was playing our Igor Stravinsky records and scratching the crap out of them.
Was that
my mother's dismay?
We won't go into why he was scratching the living crap, but I can imagine the reasons why he was not a steady hand going.
I'm not sure, really. You know, for me at the time, I was surrounded by a lot of music and a lot of incredibly charismatic, gifted artists, but I didn't know.
You didn't really know even the atmosphere you were in and how ridiculously wild that was.
Or how unique and special it was even. I mean, for me, you know, John McLaughlin and Chick Corea, and these were just family friends. I didn't...
So at what point did this kind of, you know that he hit me and it felt like a kiss? At what moment did you suddenly realize that you suddenly were around this blessed group of amazingly talented people?
You know, it wasn't until much later, and it's probably a good thing because I don't think I would have been able to even enjoy it.
Right.
If I had known. You know, for instance, now, when I meet people that I admire on any artistic level, it's really hard to just be comfortable and be myself around them.
Yeah.
All that preconceived...
You suddenly become a huge fan.
Yeah, I become a moron, so...
I know that concept. I mean, not become... Well, actually, I do know the concept of becoming a moron. I understand that one well. So, what were you listening to when you closed the door of your room and you took out the record player at that time?
Oh, definitely.
It was the record player.
Yeah.
So, behind closed doors, as Charlie Rich would say, what were you listening to?
You know, for me, it was funny because there was always jazz and classical music around the house, but when everyone left and I got to sneak down into the stereo room, it was the Beatles, the Red and Blue, you know, the retrospective.
The best of.
That was their first one
Yes.
back then. And Beach Boys, Endless Summer.
Mm-hmm.
and probably
you had all the compilations. You had all the greatest hits.
Yeah, because at that point, what we're talking about, like 1978,
right?
So that was like the next. I was the next generation to start.
But that was still old music at that time.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
That
definitely.
Was. I mean, 78. That was kind of the end of an era, and I say error or era of some really strange music going on.
Oh yeah. Well, those were my parents' records, but then my brother, who was a few years older, was bringing home like early XTC records and Split Enz and, you know, all these new wave groups. And I soaked that stuff up too, and I love that too.
Yeah, so that's kind of where you ended up, is this wild mix of classic 60s, you know. It's hard to ever call the Beatles power pop, but, you know, if you're looking for a label for the Beatles today, it truly is. It was power pop, and it was rock and roll, and it was blues, and it was anything but rock, because it wasn't rock, you know. And then somewhere in the middle, and what happened to you during that, in the middle, when rock, as in, you know, metal and all that stuff, suddenly hit the world?
Oh, that was a terribly confusing time.
Yeah, seriously.
What an awful time to be an impressionable teenager, you know, the mid to late 80s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did you, you joked about Eddie Van Halen. I mean, at least, you know, there were a couple of tunes by them that had some sort of, you know, melodic.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, like.
Melodic decency.
Like all genres of music or art at large, it's just, all of that stuff starts out with great intentions. There is great, I don't care what anybody says, there is great heavy metal out there.
Mm-hmm,
and I'll be the first one to defend it.
Yeah.
The problem is, like all art forms, it gets bastardized and commercialized and homogenized and all the other jized that you can think of, and they suck all the life out of it, and it becomes trite and cliche and inauthentic.
Yeah, there's a different kind of reverb.
Yeah,
somehow that gets used on heavy. It's a different machine.
I mean, I remember this is such an odd direction the conversation's taking, but since we're on it, I'll just
say
briefly that, you know, I remember at a certain point living in Los Angeles as a teenager in the 80s, you know, all I wanted to do was get in a band and play shows. And I remember at that point, this is probably about 1988, a very important requirement was what kind of eyeliner did you use, and did you own any spandex apparel?
Avon calling.
I mean, seriously, you know, and for me, I really was, it was so, gosh, it was confusing to a guy who just wanted to make great music, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The costume, well, I guess you're just not the costume guy.
Well, you know, it's like, just don't put the cart before the horse. I love a good costume as much as the next person.
You mean you don't think that wearing a great costume and playing lousy music is, you know, and having the right dance moves is important?
If it's post-ironic,
yeah,
you know.
Likely, yeah. Well, we actually had the Darkness a while back.
Oh, that's great.
And they're we met them pretty much, you know, first U.S. tour, and they're hilarious.
Yeah.
And they totally get it. And now I just read, I don't know if even Katie, our producer, knows this, that there are threats out on the lead singer's life.
Oh, geez.
I kid you not.
Oh, no.
Can you imagine? So that's the kooks that are out there. But now let's take the conversation back to where it belongs. Okay, so all of these influences. When did you first actually get in a band? What was it, and what did you play?
Wow, these are great questions. I think I had a band when I was probably about 9 years old. All I wanted to do was be the Beatles, like most kids.
Nothing wrong with that. Which Beatle did you want to be?
All of them. That was the problem.
So you wanted to be John, Ringo.
I wanted to be everyone but Ringo, basically.
Yeah, well, we won't go there.
Yeah.
We won't go there. Ringo held his own.
I love Ringo.
He held his own.
I just didn't want to be Ringo.
Yeah, but Octopus's Garden is just not the best song on Abbey Road.
But the guitar solo
is great.
It's amazing.
It's great.
So yeah, I just wanted to be the Beatles, and maybe, you know, I mean, whatever was on MTV at the time. It was such an early stage for MTV. They were showing a lot of great guitar, you know, a lot of Tom Petty, and, you know, I mean, there were really just great guitar bands at the time. But yeah, I wanted to be the Beatles. I wanted to be a rock star like any other kid.
So what did you play in your first band? What was the name? You remember the name of the first band?
Yes, it's terrible. It's called Thin Ice.
Okay, I'll trade you. You know what the name of my first band was? Now let's see if you know this reference. Desiderata.
Oh my gosh.
That was the name of my first band.
Okay.
The Les Crane, that terrible You Are the Child of the Universe.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I know. Did
you get the Thin Ice reference?
Yes, I did.
You know, Lennon had a song, John and Yoko, Walking on Thin Ice, so I thought.
Thin Ice.
That's a great name for a band.
And did you guys play Beatles stuff?
No, we played originals.
Remember any of the songs?
Yes.
Oh, give me like one verse.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You're going to have to edit this out later, but...
Oh, that's okay. I can do that.
This was the first song I ever wrote for Thin Ice. It's called Petrified Gerbil Turds. Petrified gerbil turds, they're really cool. Petrified gerbil turds, you won't find them in school. Petrified gerbil turds, they're really the best. Petrified gerbil turds come from the landlocked nest.
What did I have to edit out? Turd? I mean, heck, we're gonna try to get the word asshole in, you know, in here. Very, the general manager of the station is down the hall, and I told Katie, I'm gonna go to Steve right after this interview and say, by the way, is asshole allowed? Because Katie said, you know, if we don't have that in there, it's going to really be a really weird song.
It's true.
It's not going to be, I'm such a, and it's not going to be a lot, but we're skipping around. So after petrified gerbil turds and thin ice, yeah, I know, you're visualizing. We should just go cut that now and see what, we should have you sing it that way. And just see what exactly, well, you know, hey, you wrote the song, you want airplay, you want to make it.
I was
know?
8 years old. That's the best I could do at 8.
That was pretty good. So at what point did you graduate to, you know, like your first one that people actually showed up for? Was that just, that was the one in the backyard, I would imagine. Did Larry and Mom and the gang, did you get to play Petrified Gerbil Turds for anybody famous?
No one famous, thank goodness.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah.
What an opportunity.
What an opportunity.
Miles might have liked it.
Miles, not so much. Maybe Frank Zappa.
Frank Zappa would have totally loved it.
Yeah, knowing him like that, looking at it now, with the grown-up perspective, he probably would have loved
it. He would have just thought, he would have published it and made a million-selling record with it.
I might have been the new Captain Beefheart.
You could have been. These are possibilities. So when did you get serious? When did you say, you know what, my dad has this life, and I should ask, it's a question within a question, did your dad in any way not encourage you to pursue music?
He never discouraged me from pursuing music. He discouraged me from pursuing pop music.
Did he give you the whole guilt? Pop is not real music. Jazz is all, or classical is all, and you should be at Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, I mean, that's a generalization, but for the sake of time and this conversation, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you were very polite and said, but dad.
It was, you know, it was even worse than that. I was like a drug addict. It's like, you know, if you take away the crack pipe, I'm just going to find another one.
Right. So, right, exactly. You know. You're speaking euphemistically. I just want to make sure the audience knows
that. Oh, yeah, of course.
Of course. No drugs in the picture. It's rock and roll. It would never be possible. So when did you get serious?
I got serious. Basically, I made a deal with myself. I would do what my parents wanted me to do, which was to become a great, quote-unquote, guitar player.
Right.
Or should I say, quote-unquote, great guitar player. There we go. And I would just have my nasty little pop habit in the closet.
the closet pop habit.
Yeah. So I'd be,
there's a name for a band.
The closet pop habit.
Closet pop habit.
I'll probably I can't form even that say band it. In like 20 years.
Coming soon.
So, you know, I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston.
Okay.
And
What years were you there? Now, this will be interesting.
89 to 91.
So you were there exactly a decade after I was there.
Wow.
I did Boston from 80 to 86.
Oh.
During that whole, you know, you're talking about that whole new wave era. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's when I was in Boston.
That must have been a great time to be there.
It was an amazing time. But Boston.
Got the cars, right?
Oh, yeah. Lived in, story the audience doesn't need to hear, but lived right above Rick Ocasek.
Wow.
Literally. So, but enough about me. The thing is about Boston. I think anybody that trained in Boston, there's something about them that suddenly, and I've talked about this, there's a guy named Joe Pernice. He has a band called the Pernice Brothers, which I will turn you on to, by the way. I will make sure you know about them because you will love them. They're very
cool.
Poppy, and he sat in this room not that long ago. And we started talking about the fact that he's a Berklee boy too. And there's just something about people that come out of Berklee that their music, and it's funny because, yeah, it's a jazz school.
Oh, yeah.
But there are so many people who went to Berklee for jazz and ended up being these amazing rock and roll musicians.
Yeah.
What do you think? What's it about? What's in the air there that you're sucked into the air conditioning system with jazz, but you're pumped out and you turn into a rock and roller?
You know what I think it is? My friend Phil Roy, who also went to Berklee.
Who's in the studio, by the way. Just
who happens
so
to
we
be
know.
Here
yeah.
today with us.
Yeah, we'll get his music in here somewhere. We just will.
Has often said, because he went to Berklee as well, And I'm just going to kind of take what he said and I'm going to put it into my own words, which is you go to a place like Berklee and you hear the best of the best as far as jazz goes.
Yeah, incredible.
And at that point, you're really, it becomes very clear, you know, do you want to be one of those people or is it good enough to know that they exist and so you can then go off and do something else?
But isn't it interesting? I mean, when I was taking my classical piano lessons,
right.
And I'll never forget, I've told this story on the air enough times for my listeners to be sick of it, but my German conservatory piano teacher, who was 4 million years old, turned to me one day and said, well, you know, I can't do a good German accent. I mean, I'm Jewish and I can't do a good German accent. She basically said, you are going to play rock and roll. I have taught you for 7 years. You know everything you need to know to do it. I'm not going to teach you any more classical.
Mm.
And I think people that end up really musical took the time to get the classical or the jazz education before they did the rock and roll thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
because you need it to play rock and roll.
Yeah. You know, the secret about rock and roll, and this is a secret as far as I know, because I've never heard anyone else say it, is you have to be incredibly, on one level, overqualified.
Yes.
To be a great rock and roll
musician.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
And why that's the case, I'm not sure, but all
I know,
you have to
go all the way up to the top of the stairs, see the view, to come back down to the place where you're going to be.
Yeah. It's
which is kind of weird.
It's almost like, well, I can only speak empirically, which by saying, I never met an artist in the pop or rock realm that I admired that didn't surprise me when I met them with the knowledge and the ability they had in so many genres of music.
I know, kind of, if you actually take the time to have a conversation, it actually blows you away.
I mean, I've talked with Michael Penn about Django Reinhardt. I've talked with, Sting about, you know, my dad's music. I mean, I could tell you these anecdotes for hours about these pop musicians. God, I've talked to John Mayer about George Benson. I mean, these guys know this stuff, and they love it, and they have a respect for it, and they've studied it. And the layman would never know.
Yeah, no, it's very true.
It's very bizarre.
So you went to Berkeley. You graduated Berkeley.
Went to Berkeley. Graduated Berkeley. And after a brief stint playing country music in Missouri.
Country music, and any do you have a famous country music song you remember that you did?
Well, I got to play Will the Circle Be Unbroken with Loretta Lynn. That was
very nice. Very nice.
So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I also got to play a bunch of Hank Williams songs with people that I won't mention.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that was, you know, it was fun for me to do that for a minute. But I came to New York. I literally flipped a coin. It was New York or LA. And I think I decided on New York because I didn't own a car.
That's a good reason.
You didn't need a car to live in New York.
That's a good reason.
And you did to live in LA. So I moved to New York and decided I would become a singer-songwriter, you know, performer, whatever that is. So I made
started doing the free nights and that.
Yeah, the open mics and the
right.
the Irish bars on Monday nights that nobody goes to.
And all of this not really using any of the influence or the human beings that you were surrounded by with your dad.
Yeah, I didn't want their help.
Right.
And quite honestly, it's a very interesting place to be when you have access to means that
right.
aren't able to help you
in the particular genre
that you need. So
yeah.
It's sort of like, you know, your dad works at, you know, the Cadillac factory and all you really want is a Volkswagen or something.
Right.
I don't know how else to describe
no,
it.
No, that's a good way to describe it. So then what happened?
What happened?
We'll now skip decades.
Yes, of course. I slugged it out for years. I made a living playing guitar with other people,
mm-hmm.
producing.
So what was your first famous human being that you played on? That people would say, that they could go back now to their records or their CDs and say, oh, look at that, he played guitar in the background.
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's so random. I mean, there was a group called Changing Faces that was on Atlantic that had a gold record. I played guitar in that.
Mm-hmm.
That was like 1994.
Mm-hmm.
I played with, unfortunately, or maybe not unfortunately, I played with a lot of artists that people never really heard of, largely.
Right.
You know, people like Cliff Eberhardt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great folk singer-songwriter. Richie Havens I played with.
Well, some people know Richie Havens.
Some people know Richie Havens.
Yeah, I hope so.
There was a group called October Project that
I know who they are.
That I played with for a while, and they were great. Still really good friends of mine.
So when did this, as they say, switch flip?
The switch flip? I get asked that question a lot, and
you can't even identify it.
It wasn't as if I woke up that one morning and said, wow, now I'm a fully realized singer-songwriter.
Right.
It was just something that I had no choice. It is what I am. So I've just been working on it for years. I've been making, you know, this is my fifth record. You know, I have a record
is
out now.
Is it really? That's
and it's
amazing.
It's my fifth record. I mean, it's silly.
Wow.
It's my fifth record in 10 years.
You have to send me some dubs of the other four.
Yeah. Well,
seriously.
The problem is the first three were jazz records.
That's okay. That can be fun.
And that they're fun, but that complicated things.
Yes.
And it continues to complicate things.
Well, no, I know. Again, put you in the box.
Yeah, artists are not rewarded for their eclecticism.
No, no, you have it. Not these days.
Not these days, certainly.
You have to be in the box.
Yeah.
So when, well, let me ask it even more definitively. When did the United Musicians, Amy Mann, right. Michael Penn right. gang, as I call them.
Yes, they are a gang.
Well, no, they are. They're and it was interesting because I was looking at Amy's CDs this morning before I left, and I kind of found that moment where there was the segue from, you know, I mean, the album on Geffen, mm-hmm. you know, she had a CD on Geffen, and then next thing you know, it's on this independent label. Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, United Mission, you know, Musicians existed, and next thing you know, Michael. And so now it's become this ultra, I mean, I hate to say this, but I feel it's this ultra hip kind of interesting club that I would venture to say is very hard to get into.
It's nice company to keep.
Yeah.
I made a record on Universal in mm-hmm. 1999 called Bitter to Sweet, and that was the first quote-unquote pop record I made.
Right.
The problem was...
They didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, it was a pop record that had eight-piece string sections and songs in 5/4, so...
They didn't know what the heck to do with it.
Yeah, they didn't know how to promote it. I didn't know how to give them what they wanted. You know, it was one of those classic... mismatched relationships.
Par for the course.
Par for the course. You know, toured a little relentlessly for a while, sold about 12 copies, got held up on that deal. They wouldn't let me out of the contract. They wouldn't let me put out a new record.
Oops.
So I kind of languished for about 3 years waiting to get out of that deal. And in the interim, I needed to make a living, so I started working for other musicians again.
And did you get suddenly on a session with Amy? Did it just kind of work out that way?
What happened was I started playing, this is such an interesting lineage, you'll maybe appreciate this. I was playing with Louise Goffin,
mm-hmm.
who's Carole King's
yes.
daughter.
Yes, I just did a Brill, I just daughter. Did a special 2-hour special on the Brill Building about 3 weeks ago.
Oh, that's great.
So I'm very deep into all of that stuff at this moment.
Well, Louise is another example of a second generation artist who's incredibly gifted.
Mm-hmm.
Makes great records. So we were promoting her record, and my friend Jevin, who played keyboards with her, also plays with Amy.
Ah.
And
hence the hookup suddenly happened.
That was the connection, because Louise's campaign ended, as all campaigns to break new records do.
Yes.
And Jevin called me, and he said, Amy needs a guitar player. Do you want to do it?
And you said, let me think about this. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was silly. I mean, I've auditioned, I've done callbacks, you know, silly right. things over the years. And this was literally, you know, she needs a guitar player. I can vouch for you.
Right.
If I tell her that you're good, she trusts me.
By the way, that's the Woodpeckers in the KUSF studio. People know how, people who listen to these interviews know how incredibly soundproof Studio C is here.
I love the Woodpeckers.
Yeah, it's a special moment.
But so we met for coffee. We chatted a little bit. And after that, I guess she felt secure in taking me.
Was
on.
She tough?
No. She was very nice. We just talked about life.
That's what, yeah, that I think she'd be more concerned with that than just about anything else.
Well, you know what it is? At a certain level, everyone's a great musician.
Right.
That's not an issue. The issue is, can you be around this person day in, day out on a tour bus? Flying, you know, around the world, across the country, hours and hours at a time, and not want to kill them. So that's really.
So did you? So you were with Amy on that tour?
Oh yeah,
yeah. We went all. I knew over I the recognized world. You from somewhere.
We so. Went all over the world. Yeah.
Terrific, and then it became so. Basically, eventually, I imagine the segue is that they said, you know, you should record for us.
Well, this is the weird thing: is it happened so organically and unexpectedly. I had made my record Rockstar. On my own, because while waiting for Universal to let me out of my deal, I said, I'm not waiting around anymore. I'll make this record, you know, on the down low, and I'll sell it out of the trunk of my car under a pseudonym if I have to. So I had recording equipment at home. I had a good friend that's a great engineer and a mixer, and he came over and we started working on it. It took about 3 years to make, because I'd have to go out in the road, make a little money, come back, run
do
out of
some
money,
more.
Yep, and finish that. And by the time I joined Amy's band, I'd put out the record myself, was selling it out of the trunk of my car, driving
around. So this record's been out for a while.
Well, it's been out on Julian Records for a while. But what happened was I did some touring in between Amy's tours, and one of her fans came to the show. and unbeknownst to me, bought the record, sent it to Amy's manager. I mean, it's such a weird way.
That is so bizarre.
Yeah.
So you had play. That is really weird.
See,
so
I don't.
You were playing with her the whole time.
I mean, when we first met for coffee that day, she said, "Do you write your own songs?" I said, "Yes."
But how good of you, not you're there with her, not to take advantage of that relationship.
Well, that's my point.
To be a member of the band, and then suddenly, you know, that's incredible.
You know, she asked me, "Do you write your own songs?" I said, "Yes." That was the last we ever spoke of it. I don't believe in mixing my art with the art of another person.
You know what? Your album's called Rockstar, but the humility is just blowing me away.
Well, you know,
seriously.
I'll be honest with you. It's tacky. I mean, how tacky would it be for me to go, "Hey, I write songs too." You know, and that's not a judgment. If other people do that, it's fine. It's just not what I do.
That's amazing.
And so unbeknownst to me, Amy's manager heard the record, called me up, said, "I really like this record." And then he sent it to Amy and Michael Penn, and they heard it and they really liked it.
We should put this
out. And then we started talking, yeah.
And this was not long ago.
No, this wasn't that long ago.
Not long ago at all.
Not long ago.
Because
at all,
how long? Really? What I'm holding in my hand. This has been out for.
Well, the record came out just about a month ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's brand new. Okay, I have a question before we have you play some songs. I love the little photo album I've got here. So is this the Julian Coryell household we're looking at here?
Yeah. Rockstar is a document of a place and time. Mm-hmm. And again, I was stuck on a record label that wouldn't let me out of the deal and wouldn't let me put out a record. So I felt like a prisoner, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I made the record secretly in my house.
Yeah, I see all the equipment.
I
love, this is, by the way, the most. Now, I'm an anal Jewish boy from New York. This has got to be the most organized. Do you guys see this? This is the most organized lineup. My daughter does this. I mean, she's growing up like dad, and then she'll mess it all up and stuff, which is what you do. But you've started, it's kind of the way the record is. You've started very... There's a lot of craft and a lot of attention to the lyrics, and it's actually pretty damn perfect in its musicianship. But then you've gone out of your way, as you say in the lyrics of that song, which hopefully I won't have to cut out that I'm saying this. You know, then you go to F it up.
Yeah, sure.
You literally do.
Yeah.
So is that kind of your methodology, is you start very definitively and organized, and then you take it and you mess with it? Are you that type of...
Well, I'm just trying to liberate myself so I can make a great record.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with being schooled, I'm schooled. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
If I try to play like somebody who's unschooled, it sounds inauthentic. And people say, "Julian, that's, come on. You know, we know what you can do. Why are you doing that other thing?"
Mm-hmm.
And so my only method to authenticity is to accept sort of, hey, I have this training, I have this schooling, but that's not interesting. So what is interesting? Well, I'm also kind of screwed up as a human being. So, you know, can I interject
that
into my music?
See, I wasn't going to go into the lyrics yet. I was going to let people hear a couple of songs. And then I was going to say, excuse me, but is this really true?
Yeah, you know, it is true, but the truth is
but it's magnified.
Well, sure.
It better be.
Sure.
Otherwise, I'm scared. I'm very scared at this very moment. So.
Yeah.
So let's hear a song. We've got the guitar in hand. Now, Asshole and Rockstar, those are kind of keyboard things, are they not?
Yeah.
So what are we gonna do with the guitar before we go to the keyboard? Because, of course, we have to have you play the hits, so we'll do like three things.
Okay.
Hit us with one.
Yeah, you know, I'd love to do Old Woman.
Okay.
It's such a fun song. I don't
think
it's too much.
Yeah. I'll try to mix it well.
I'm excited.
Yeah, me too.
Old woman, you look so sad, 'cause all your dreams are through. I see the longing on your face, I've been watching you. Come and take a walk with me to the grave today. Come and take a walk with me to the grave. Today might be your day. Old woman,
Today might be your lucky day. 'Cause you don't want to live no more, but don't know what to do. Well, I don't feel so good myself. There's so much we've been through. Come and take a walk with me to the grave today. Come and take a walk with me to the grave today. Might be our day, old woman. Today might be a lucky day.
We'll dub in, you know, massive Madison Square Garden level, you know,
cool.
Whichever, or if there's some like laugh track you'd
a
like from like Green Acres or, you know,
track would be great.
We could do a laugh track combined with some sort of applause thing. What would be, okay, here we go. Ready? Julian Coryell's, do the top 40. Julian Coryell's top three shower compilation songs.
Oh, top three, gosh.
And you know what? And before we do Rockstar, I want you to tell me them, and then I want you to sing them as you would in the shower.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Here we go.
Well, for me personally?
Oh, sure. Top three shower compilation. What do you want on your shower compilation?
Well, I mean, God, the criteria.
So it has to be singable in the shower.
Right, it has to be singable in the shower. It
has to be singable really badly.
It would have to be stuff that, like, it would have to be stuff, because when people sing in the shower, I know we're really getting tangential now, but when people sing in the shower, isn't it sort of like there's a vulnerability because you're naked?
You're naked.
No
you
one
also,
else is there.
Or, you know, people shave in the shower, so it could be, you know, you shook me off, and next thing you know,
right,
blood all over the place.
Like,
could be bad.
Like when people, I'm just trying to think, like, would the shower songs be songs that,
you woke up this morning and said, this is going to be an easy interview. This guy's going to ask me this kind of
nonsense.
These
are amazing questions. I'm the kind of guy that really can't let go of these kind of detailed questions.
Yeah, and I ask those questions.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to think, because it's not, it would have to be songs that you would not sing in public.
Yes. Terrible, guilty pleasure songs.
Yeah, in other words, if it were my songs,
right,
like my shower songs, they wouldn't be songs that I would sing at a show, for instance.
That's right. Okay, so go ahead.
It would probably be something like, you know what it would be? It would be something like, and here's this is even more apropos, I don't even know half the lyrics,
oh,
so I make up my own. So it would be like, what would I sing in the shower? It would be like, it definitely like some sort of Bee Gees song.
Oh, Bee Gees,
I'm trying to think, like, what would it be? What was the one I was hearing the other day?
I've got to get a message to you.
No, no, no. It's off Saturday Night Fever. It's,
How deep is your love?
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This is how it would be in the shower.
And nobody knows what those, do you know what that first,
I don't
no
even
know idea. What that first line is.
I think it's in E flat, though.
Something, something, Morning Light.
Da, 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 da. How's it go, Phil? Da, 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 da. 'Cause we're living, but you have to do it really high. So, 'cause we're living in a world of love.
Dogs from all over San Francisco.
That was.
Can you see the tears?
Yeah, I see some sort of tears. I'm not sure. Tears of what?
Woe? Tears of woe.
Tears of fear?
Tears for fears. Thank you very
much. Yeah.
Thank you very much. We'll actually be playing all night.
That would be another one.
Tears for fears you could do.
I would be the guy that would be like, I would be this guy. I'd be like, welcome to your life. There's no turning back. Da, 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 da. Everybody wants to see that girl. You know, that's
you know, you've just really done a whole different perspective on that song for me. You've just made that song very monotone. And every time I hear it now,
I'm trying to give you shower songs.
No,
everybody wants to
that
rule
is
the world.
So.
It would be everybody wants to see that girl because you have to screw up the lyric. You have to, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to not know the lyric.
That is such a weird shower song.
Alex the Seal. That would be another great one. It would be. Pay no mind to what they say. It doesn't matter anyway. Alex the Seal.
Alex the Seal.
You know, be one of those.
All right. Julian, thank you very much for those. Oh,
really. I'm taking the Pro Tools files, by the way, when this is over.
Have you gotten that out of your system? let's save ourselves. Do that hit song.
Okay.
Do the hit song. Julian Coryell? We should do like a 60s progressive, you know. This is Julie Coryell with Rockstar.
So I wait for the day when you rise up and wake up and walk out the door. But you never do. Why don't you? In this state, it can only get worse. I rehearse for the end. Then we're back on again. Well, you should've married a rock star. You should've married a rock star. You should've married a rock star. Not me. Not me. Not me. Oh, oh, oh. One by one, it has done all our hopes, and our dreams are dropping like flies, like tears from your eyes. Was I truly you? Who's to say? What is wrong, what is right, when we're holding so tight. So I'll give you tonight. But you should've married a rock star. You should've married a rock star. You should've married a rock star. Not me. Not me. Not me. Oh, oh. I try every day to be
everything, give you everything, all that you say that you want. But I stumble and we fight. Yeah, 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 hey, 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 yeah. Oh, 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 if you were my wife, could we have a good life? Yes, I think, yes, I know that we could. But it's not any good if I'm not the man you think I am. Fancy cars and a house and a dream, I could scream cause you took it so far. Now I see what you are. Well, you should've married a rock star. You should've married a rock star. You should've married a rock star. Not me. Not me. Oh no, not me. Not me.
Okay, one more bad visualization before we wrap this up. Back to the shower thing.
Uh-huh.
People in different places singing rock star. Can you imagine the people like in Staten Island or even in, you know, Dorchester in Boston?
You should have married a rock star.
Rock star.
Rock star.
I think this, or even a Southern, you know, can you imagine?
It would be, you should have married a rock star.
He's got some great, great opportunities there.
Rock star.
So when this is a huge hit, who do you want to do the cover?
Justin Timberlake.
Or the uncover is the case, maybe.
Yes.
Exactly. Julian, thank you so much. This is going to make a great, you know, and talk about time. This is going to make a great hour-long song. Come on in for a 15-minute interview. This is going to make an hour-long epic, the Julian Coryell story.
Thank you for the wonderful interview, Dennis.
Oh, no, you're welcome.